guys jump in.
Amanda or Jake, and also David Shee. David Shee is a colleague of mine in the English department, and he has boxes and boxes of Scott Adams games in his parents' house back in Texas. And when we were talking about this, he thought he would just love to come by. So thanks for coming. I've spoken with all three of our sort of semi-panelists here. I guess Dave, come on over here.
Pull up another chair.
Yeah, pull up a chair. Go ahead, go to it. Ask some questions or give your feedback. Scott has been very generous with our time. With his time. He's been generous with his time.
I guess, I don't know if you guys have something you want to say or if you want to take some questions, but how much do you feel storytelling has improved in video games over time? I mean,
that's a real good question.
Is that maybe it's just the interfaces.
Okay. There have been a lot of different games out there. Of recent note, probably one game sticks in my mind more than anything else. Two games stick in mind as fantastic storytelling opportunities that they took advantage of. One of them, the first one, was Half-Life. Anyone hear of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyone here play it? Hands. Okay, a number of you. Basically what Half-Life is a science fiction first-person shooter. You're plunked down this world with literally nothing, and you're thrown into a world where a disaster's happened of a extraterrestrial nature, and you're going to save the world, literally. The thing is that writers did a very good job. They suck you into the story. You, after a while, feel like you are the player. There was something awesome about walking down this darkened corridor, seeing this monster coming. No, I'm sorry. Walking down this corridor, brightly lit corridor, just having created this, accomplished this great task. I had to do something, and I'm walking back, and all of a sudden, one by one, the lights start going out. And next thing I knew is I hear a roar down at the end of the corridor. I was like this in front of the computer. Oh! The artist who wrote that sucked me into his world. He was telling me a story, and I was living it. That was excellent. Another game that recently came out that also did the same thing was Deus Ex. Yes. It's from the old Greek, Deus Ex Machina, which meant basically from God, but it meant the hook that would come in and rescue the protagonist when they're put in a situation they couldn't handle.
God from the machine, Deus
exactly.
Ex Machina.
A lot of people will pronounce it Deus Ex, but the game itself was unique and one of the first to do it, and you'll see a lot of coming out that are going to imitate it. You're put into the same type thing, a first-person shooter, except it's not. You can go in and solve any one of the problems. You can be the guy with guns blazing, blowing out the Marines at the front door, or you can decide you want to play this as a computer hacker, come around the back, hack the computer, and have their weapons that are there to protect them turn and shoot them. You can decide that you want to play it as a thief and sneak through the tunnels and through the air conditioning ducts. You play the game not exactly the way you want to because there are constraints, but your freedom to play the game is greatly expanded. This was tremendously difficult for the game developers. Not only did they have to provide all the different routes in, but they had to make sure that every person that was playing the game and wanted to choose a particular route would have that available to them. Also, as you played the game, the character you were playing would grow, and you'd come to choices. He was like the bionic man. He came to a section where he could get implants. But depending on which implant you pick now would mean later you can't pick a different implant. So a lot of choices were made, a lot of branches. But the whole thing has to come to a conclusion at the very end. And that was kind of hard to do. I see a head nod, and you like that one?
Oh, I love that game. The four different endings I thought was amazing.
Exactly. Not one ending, four endings that you could choose from. This is one future of interactive fiction, or interactive game playing. The other one is, as he was mentioning, is the massive online role-playing games. I recently got sucked into, and it's about 3 weeks, I haven't been playing it long, EverQuest. If you've never tried a massively online role-playing game, that is something worth trying. Right now, it used to be cost $50 a game and $10 a month to play. Right now, they brought back the classic version. It costs $10 to buy the game. They give you the first month for free, and you can cancel it at any time. So basically, you can try the game for $10 for a month. It is extremely addicting because it's not only do you go in and you're fighting the monsters. That's fun. Everybody wants to fight monsters, sure. What you're doing is you're building a character. You basically come into the world in a loincloth or a bikini, depending on the sex or gender you're playing, and a couple of cents in your pocket, a wooden
sense.
Club, and you go from there. But you're not just fighting the NPCs, which are non-player characters. It's the PCs in there. At any given time, when I log on to the EverQuest world, there are literally 50 to 100,000 people playing at the same time. Now, we're not all playing in the same world. They have divided up into multiple servers. The world that I'm playing in usually has around 2,000 people online at the same time. We're all playing together and getting... Yeah?
Oh, I can wait until you...
Okay, so you have all these people playing together. We're not only relating to the monsters, we're relating to each other, and that is the fascinating part. Here's an example. First day I'm playing this character, and I get into the world, and there I am in my loincloth and my wooden club, and I said, I'm going to role play. You can role play or you can be an avatar. By role playing means that I am a creature who really lives in this world. I'm acting. Somebody comes up to me and says, hey man, what level are you? And I say, excuse me, young sir, I am a new apprentice and do not know what this level is that thou talks about. I said, what level are you? Please do not shout at me. I am just a lowly apprentice. Do not understand this strange talk. Jumping up and down. What level are you? By this time, he's attracted a crowd around us. I don't know why. So we have other players standing around looking at this guy jumping up and down, yelling at me. He won't tell me what level he is. I am a lowly apprentice. Please, sir, don't hit me. Woman walks up, dressed in big flowing robes and a crown on her head and a scepter in her hand. Obviously not a new player. And she starts talking to me. She says, is there a problem here? And I said, oh, noble lady, please, I am but an apprentice and do not understand the strange ways of this land. We start talking back and forth. Meanwhile, this guy is over in the corner. What level are you? One track mind, okay. Talking to the nice lady, we're going well. Every once in a while, she turns and says, shut up! Still no good. He's still bouncing up and down. She turns and she gives me 10 pieces of platinum. A platinum is approximately $1,000 in this game world. I have the equivalent of 50 cents in my pocket, starting as a game player. She suddenly gives me $10,000. This is a tremendous boost. By the way, when you go into this game, doesn't matter who you are, rich, poor, whatever. Everybody starts the game at the same level, start the same things. Everything you want, you have to get for yourself or have somebody give to you as you build up your character. Socialization is very important in this game. It is amazing. So he gives me the 10 pieces of platinum. And so I turn to the other guy, and he's looking at me. She just gave me a small fortune, and he's going, what level are you? Okay, so I decide I'm going to take pity on him, and I go to OOC mode, out of character. It means anything that I say, I'm deliberately not role-playing. I'm talking person to person. I say to him, I'm role-playing. I'm not really mad at you. I'm not upset. I'm just simply role-playing the character. And he types back, what's role-playing? Serious. Very serious. So I proceeded to explain to him, and all of a sudden, on his avatar, it was like, light bulb goes on over his head, and he's role-playing now. He gets into it a little slowly, but he falls into it. And we play that night. I played with him because I was having fun. We went out and we killed monsters and looted their corpses. And he was a level 7. Ooh, I was a level 1. So he could go after monsters I didn't dare attack. And he got some loot that there's no way I could get. And he gave 90% of it to me. He was really generous and friendly. At the end of the day, I said to him, this is really nice. You are a tremendous friend to me. I kept calling him young sir. You're a tremendous friend to me, young sir. I shall always remember you when I become a famous fighter. And I had a plan to walk into this world that these designers have created, and I'm creating the story as I go along. And there are 1,000 other people doing the same thing at the same time. We've got guilds. We've got groups that play together. It is utterly amazing what is happening. The graphics are still relatively primitive compared to going to see a movie or something like that. But the interaction between the people is what makes the game a lot of fun. And there are those people who get in that simply go in, kill the monster, get what you can, and get out. That's fine. You can play it that way. They don't know what role-playing is. For those who jump into the world and wrap themselves in it and want to become an actor, it's fascinating. Now, you had a question.
I don't know. I've played Ultima Online, which is another...
Yes, you will.
Played that back in high school, and I thought it was interesting how, you know, there were several different worlds that you could play on, and they're all basically the same map, but eventually the game got so popular that, you know, you could build houses. All the land where people would run around and they'd, you know, kill deer and do silly stuff like that, it was all being overrun by houses, and you actually...
It's all built up.
Yeah, and you actually had people like lobbying for conservationism.
Can you imagine us in a role-playing game?
Yeah.
The Green Party, yeah!
I just thought that was kind of funny, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And these type of things happen. And you'll get another group that comes in. Here's a very popular thing in Ultima Online originally, and still is, players, meaning humans on the game, could kill each other. Normally, if you're playing on the game and you walk up and you want to kill somebody, you can. You fight. Fight it out to the death. All right. Everett Quest came along and they thought, this is driving a lot of people away. They don't like the inter-player conflict, so we're going to make it optional. In EverQuest, you can be a player killer or not be a player killer. And if you're choosing not to be a player killer, then the other players in general can't hurt you. But they may not help you either. In general, the majority of the players are not player killers in most of EverQuest. But there are a couple of servers where anybody logging onto that server, they are in a player killer world, and there's no choice. So they have it both ways for the people who want to play it.
Jake, really quick, you've had experience in the industry, the stuff that we've been talking about, graphics versus storytelling. What's your experience of that from your side?
I'm probably the opposite of you guys. I designed games and stuff that were lacked form and lack substance, in a sense where the player itself is seeking immediate gratification. I'm talking about first-person shooters and stuff, and the 3D graphics. And when you essentially, I mean, again, Ultima Online and stuff, those games lack a form, a storyline. And in that sense, you consumers can replay the game. And like Quake 2 and those games are still really popular because there's no storyline. It's constantly
dynamic.
It's replayable. I mean, once you don't play through the storyline once, because there's
right.
no storyline.
Like Deus Ex, or Half-Life, good example. You play through Half-Life, you're not going to play it again. You've already played through Half-Life.
Story takes a lot of resources.
Yeah.
When you run out of story, you're done with.
Plus, once... You can only put so much story in there. Mm-hmm. And if you're story-driven, then you've got a one-shot game. So it's hard to determine how do you make it. Now, Deus Ex sort of changed that, because then you can replay it being a different type of character. But still, there's only one story in there.
And, I mean, even most single-player games out now, you're talking about a max playtime of 48 hours. And to invest that much time and resources into developing a storyline just is not practical these days.
Now, there are some that are different. A good example would be Baldur's Gate 2, which recently came out. It's a fantasy role-playing game, something like Ultima Online, but single player, where you go in and you control up to 6 characters and you have a story through it. They literally have close to 200 or 300 hours of gameplay in there. And what's happened is some people say that's too much. They get tired of it, doing the same thing over and over. So sometimes there's got to be a balance between the two, too. And it's 48 hours is an average. There are some games that are even shorter, you know, 20 hours, and somebody says, hey, I paid $50 for this game, I only played it for 20 hours, and I wore it out.
Amanda, you are writing a game for my class. Tell us a little bit about your experiences learning what gives when you have, you know, what you have to get rid of in order to use the strengths of the interactive media.
Well, a lot of the problems I ran into in the beginning was learning the programming language, because like Dr. Joseph said before, I had never done any programming whatsoever, and this was very new to me. So a lot of my creations were limited by my programming ability, and so I originally wrote out a transcript of things that I wanted to happen in the game, and when I went to program it, there'd be glitches and things that I couldn't put in those things that I wanted, so I ended up cutting out a lot of that original material. And some of it is stupid things, like you forget to put in a comma and the whole thing won't work. And for someone who's not used to that kind of thing, it's very, very frustrating.
Computers are very, very literal. If you say one thing, they take it exactly the way you say it and not what you meant.
Yes. And so that works with your creative process and things like that.
It plays havoc with your creative process.
Scott, could you tell us the story about the bear and the person?
Okay, here's a very good example of an unintended side effect. I told you about my first game, Adventureland. Well, to conserve space in this 16K world, I only looked at the first three letters of the nouns and verbs that people typed in. There's a section where there's a bear on a ledge. Okay? And you've got to get past this large bear. And being a pacifistic game, you're not going to be able to kill the bear no matter what shape you try. You can give it honey if you want, but honey is one of your treasures, and you're going to end up wasting your treasure.
That's why I didn't get the full score.
There is an alternate solution. What I wanted the player to do was to yell at the bear to scare it off. You could also scream at the bear, too, as an acceptable synonym. Well, I got a fan letter in that just had my whole company rolling in the aisles when they got it. They said, we got to that bear on the ledge. We tried giving it the honey, and he ate it up, and boy, that was a treasure, and that's no good. So we reloaded the save game, and we went back to that bear. And we pushed that bear. We prodded that bear. We tickled that bear. We have gotten so upset with that bear, we could get nowhere. Now, the following is rated PG-13, so if you don't want to hear it, please close your ears. Okay. Continuing. And so we finally said, screw the bear! And it replied, bear is so startled, he falls off the ledge! They thought I was a genius programmer!
Dave, from your childhood playing Scott Adams games, do you have any experiences like this? Was there one puzzle that you just never gotten able to solve and you would like to ask Scott now how to get past it?
Yeah, I hope I'm remembering this correctly, but this is around 1981 or 1982. This was before we got the IBM PC and we had a TI-99-4A.
Oh, yeah!
Which is the one that was hawked by Bill Cosby. I don't. Yep. Actually, you probably don't even remember these commercials. But
anybody remember Bill Cosby?
Yeah, you remember Cosby. But the
great Jell-O commercials.
It came with a very expensive, like, single-sided floppy drive, if you wanted to have that. But what most people had was a cassette recorder, and you kind of hooked it into the computer. And that's the way that I would play the Scott Adams Adventures, that you had to get a cartridge that you put in, and then you would purchase these cassette tapes with the games. And the one that I remember most is, I think it was called Tomb of Horrors. I'm not sure. Tomb was in the title. I'm not sure if I'm remembering it correctly. But there was this moment where you were in a kind of pyramid.
Pyramid of Doom.
Pyramid of Doom, right. Pyramid of Doom. And you're in this pyramid, and you're supposed to move this block somehow. And I'm not sure if you're supposed to get on top of the block to go through kind of a passageway, but you're supposed to do something to this block and move it out of the way. And I swear I must have spent a couple of weeks trying to figure that out.
Screw the block.
I guess it should have been more profane. I was 12, but I don't know. Do you remember that situation?
The interesting thing about Pyramid of Doom, I didn't write it. This is an interesting story. I did seven adventure games, and starting to think about number eight, I get in the mail a letter from a fan, a fellow by the name of Alvin Files. He's a lawyer, still is. I had email from him recently. But anyway, he was a lawyer, and he loved my adventure game so much that he disassembled my source code and figured out my system. I couldn't even figure out my system. He literally was able to back up everything that I had done, figure out how I did it, and he wrote an adventure game, and he sent it to me. He wanted to see if it would be all right if he sold it. And I thought, wow, this guy really has got something on the ball. This, to take my code, literally, and take it apart bit by bit and figure out what was doing, figure out the system and write a game, and that's what Pyramid of Doom was. I didn't write that.
You have his email address?
Yes. Actually, I've got hint sheets on my website, so they can download and see how to get past it. I did play the game, and I did edit it with him. I went back and forth, and I said, no, we can't do that. No, this is going to be a nonviolent game, but in general, 80% of the work was his. And I honestly don't remember the stone block.
Yeah.
So sorry. But it's an interesting side note, yeah.
What do you think of the fact of violence in video games nowadays and how...
Well, I play EverQuest. And in EverQuest, the idea is to hack and kill the monsters. It is not graphic, though. You're sitting there swinging the knife, and they're sitting there clawing at you or whatever, but you don't see blood going, you don't see blood gushing. It's cartoon violence. I have seen some very graphic games. Soldier of Fortune is one that comes to mind. We're shooting somebody in the groin, they kneel over, grabbing themselves, screaming in horror. My feeling of that is it's too graphic. I don't need that. I went to see the latest Hannibal movie and walked out halfway. I don't need that. I don't need that sort of image burned in my head. It's not fun. It's disgusting. There is, by nature, a violence in us. Man is a violent animal. We're not herbivores. We're omnivores. We're out there as, in general, the male of the species more violent than the female. There is a need to express that violence, whether it's in professional sports. Let's face it, professional sports is not a knitting club. There's a reason that it's the way it is. It's man's violence against men being channeled. And I can see channeling in video games, nothing wrong with that. Taking it to extremes, though, I think is wrong and going to cause more problems in our society than anything else. That's my personal opinion. In general, I like myself writing games that I know anybody can enjoy. I don't have to put a label on it and say this is just for R-rated or X-rated or something like that. When I do a game, I can say anybody can play it, anybody can enjoy it. I can understand writing games for an adult situation. What I can't understand is writing games that give people the desire to cause more hurt to other people. I don't like. The games I enjoy playing are cooperative. I love playing a cooperative game of EverQuest where I work with people against the evil that confronts us. I don't like the player killer servers where the desire is to go out and kill the other player. That's not for me. I don't like that, and I'd like to see less of it myself. I think a world that works together and teams together against a common evil is going to be a far better world than one where you're going head to head. Personal opinion.
In regards, starting with the games and violence and sort of in regards to EverQuest, I don't know, you said you've only been playing for like
3 weeks.
3 weeks. Did you hear about the Mystere incident? Has anyone heard about that? If anyone plays EverQuest at all? Well, this happened, I suppose, a few months ago now. And, you know, you're talking about the role-playing in-game, and I've been playing for 2 years now, so.
Okay. What server?
Rel Saralis.
Okay. Well, if you ever want to come on Tribunal, look me up.
If you ever need a guild, I'm running one.
I just started one, too.
At any rate, this is about, you know, you're talking about the role-playing in-game. That happens in-game, but then it gets brought out of game where on message boards on the internet, people are writing stories either about things that happen in-game or stories that they make up just based on this world, and they're getting posted. And on the Brawl server, there was one character who went by the name of Mystere, and the character in-game was a female. The person that actually wrote it was a male. So he wrote this, he played evil characters. Pretty much all of his characters were evil, and the people that posted on this one board that I would frequent sometimes, they were all, most of them were geared more towards evil. And he wrote this one story that depicted a rather graphic rape scene. And it was based in the world.
Yes.
And the people running the board, they never did anything about it. They just let the story go because they tried to let people have their freedom to write what they wanted. Well, the company Sony publishes it, and it was made by a company called Verant, and they got bought out by Sony. But they saw this story and didn't approve of it, so not only did they ban that person from the game, they also then forced all the boards where the story was posted to be removed.
For copyright infringement. And there was a legal basis there.
So now I've sort of switching away from the violence, I was wondering, do you see, I don't know, maybe if you've seen this in the past with your experiences, or if that, you know, see that being a problem with copyright infringements and the evil corporations trying to shut down people.
Then we can get into Napster. Anybody have opinions on Napster? Here's just a quick bottom line as far as copyrights go. Being a published author, one who relied on copyrights, one went out of business because my copyrights were not honored by those people out there, I have to say I am 100% against Napster and the idea of Napster-like things. When you have something that you create and you sell it to somebody, it's no different than when you creatively make a story and wish to sell it to people. You still own it. When you infringe on somebody else's copyright, you are simply, bottom line, stealing from them. It's no different than going into Walmart and shoplifting. Stealing music, stealing anything else that somebody else owns, that they have not let you do, is stealing. So I'm dead sense against copyright violations. Now what Sony was doing there was not because this guy was stealing from them. Sony totally just disagreed with the direction that they were twisting their universe into. It was certainly not family friendly to have these virtual rape stories out there. And so they're using that as a legal maneuver to get it shut down. I would have to say, from my point of view, what Sony did was probably 100% legally correct and probably 90% morally correct. I don't have a problem with the way they handled it and what they did. I think they did the right thing.